This is episode 302 of Jumble Think.
3-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Jumble Think, where we interview dreamers, makers, innovators, and influencers all about their journey of turning their dreams and ideas into reality. As we explore these stories, we'll share some tips on how you can turn your own dreams and ideas into reality too. On today's show, we are continuing our special theme week all about real estate. Our guest is Andrew Shenna. More about Andrew in a moment. Whether you're a new listener or a longtime fan, if you've never subscribed to JumbleThink, head on over to your favorite place to listen to podcasts, search for JumbleThink, and click that magical subscribe button. You can also find links by heading on over to jumblethink.com. Now let's join today's conversation. Hey there, welcome to Jumble Think. My name is Michael Woodward. I am your host, and we have a really cool conversation from PodMax. Now, you may be wondering, what is PodMax? Well, PodMax is an event put on by On Air Brands in Trenton, New Jersey. We headed up there and we sat down with six amazing entrepreneurs and talked all about real estate. So what we thought we would do is this week run those episodes and share those conversations all about real estate. That makes it our first ever themed week where we're releasing five new episodes. And you may have noticed I said six interviews. Now, our first interview was a little teaser we released a couple weeks ago with Alex Felice. If you missed that episode, you really should go back and join that conversation and check out what we talked about. Yesterday, we did our first episode in our theme week, and today is episode number two of this themed week. It is with Andrew Shenna. So let me tell you a little bit about Andrew. Andrew brings an in-depth knowledge of real estate, investment syndication, and business operations as a result of his 17 years of experience in the real estate industry. As a founding member of Capital Equity Partners, Andrew has spent the past 7 years analyzing, syndicating, and operating both development and cash flow asset strategies. Andrew has an intimate knowledge of asset underwriting, negotiation, acquisition, capital raising, deal structure, finance, budgeting, construction, corporate management, operations, legal, sales, and marketing. Along with founding CEP, Andrew is also a founding member of Capital Development and Construction, an MA General Contracting Corporation, where he manages its business operations and administrations, and was a founding member of Capital Residential Group. Well, there's only so much you can say in a bio, so let's go ahead and jump into the interview. I do want to let you know that there were some audio issues with the microphone, so there's a little bit of weirdness with the audio, but let's jump into the conversation.
Hey, this is Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, and you're about to hear another episode that was recorded here at PodMax, an awesome experience for entrepreneurs to get on top-rated shows all in one day. I hope you enjoy.
We are here with Andrew Shenna, and we're at PodMax.
We are.
Super excited to have you on.
Thank you, man. I'm very appreciative for you to actually be on your show and to speak to your listeners.
I'm curious, where are you coming in from?
Boston.
Ah, Boston.
You might be able to hear the accent sooner or later.
Boston in the fall, right?
Yes, right?
Something like that.
Is that a song?
I don't know. what's the old Harvard one that they
did? Oh, the park the car in the Harvard yard.
Yeah, and all that stuff.
Yeah. Us Bostonians love it when people ask us to say that.
I'm going
to
kick it off with a dangerous question.
Go for it.
Do you like the Patriots?
Come on, silly question.
I'm
sorry. No, it's good. It's of course I do. I mean, who doesn't?
I don't.
Look, anybody outside the 495 belt is generally not a big fan. The rest of us, you know, we'll follow along. It is what it is.
How many more years do you think Brady has in him?
I think he's I don't know. I think he could hang him up at the end of this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's that frustrated. That's all right.
I'm having a frustrated year too. Eagles, they're not doing so well.
No. Well, you know what? But you can rub it in my face if you want, you know?
Yeah. Feel free.
Well,
they lost to the Dolphins this year, so I mean.
Yeah, this year and the other year was, you know, like the Super Bowl was, it is what it is. You know what? We've won plenty. We'll let others win some too.
That's kind and generous of you.
You're very welcome.
Well, we're going to talk a lot about real estate and investing, and you are a partner, a founder?
One of the co-founders of Capital Equity Partners.
Cool.
Yeah.
What do you guys do?
So we are a development, a real estate development and multifamily kind of cash flow syndicators.
I've talked to other people in the past, but I know some of our listeners are going to go, syndication, is that like a newspaper?
Yeah,
or are
exactly,
we talking
right,
like
right.
the AP or something?
Yeah, like syndication, like Seinfeld, like a syndicated. Yeah. So a syndication is essentially when you have an opportunity, a real estate opportunity, and you're bringing in capital from other individuals that other individuals are providing your capital with your deal, and you put pretty much an operating agreement and a securities agreement around that.
Can you give me an example of like maybe one that we would understand or have seen?
I'm trying to think. Let's just take the office building that you're driving right past on the highway. Maybe right now. Maybe you're listening to this and you're driving past an office building. Mm-hmm. So you may have an operator, right? A company, right? That's an operator is a company that specializes in a specific asset class or like office buildings.
Okay.
And they may go out and say, okay, well, we have to buy this office building for $10 million. Well, you know, our debt or our mortgage on that is going to be $8 million. So we have $2 million in order left to raise to get the deal done. Mm. So we have, let's say we have half $500,000. So we have to go out and raise an additional $1.5 million.
Wow.
So what you do is that you go out and you speak to investors who mm-hmm. are interested and say, okay, well, what kind of returns are you willing to provide if I give you my money?
Right.
You know, you obviously there are a bunch of risks, like investment is inherent with risks. It could be the stock market, could be the bond market, real estate investments, same thing. So you have, so you will get a return based on your investment, and the return comes from the cash flow that, so that office is full of tenants and companies in the building.
Yeah.
They all pay the rent, and the rent pays for all the expenses, and whatever's left over gets divvied up between the operator and the investors.
Okay.
That's generally how, and that's how a syndication would work.
And what role do you and, Capital Equity play?
So we've been relatively vertical in our real estate operations for the last 8 years. We develop. So by development, I mean we take a parcel of land or an existing home or structure and we entitle it, meaning we go through the city and the zoning processes and the town meetings, meeting with the neighborhoods, and apply through the city to propose or put a new building there or to renovate an existing building and add square footage. Once you get that approved, that is called the entitlement process.
Okay.
So that's a big part of development is the entitlement process and then overseeing the actual construction phase of that. So we have Capital Equity Partners is the development arm and the syndication arm. So we raise the capital and we do all the entitlement out of there. And then we also have capital development and construction, which is our general contracting firm. So we're self-performing general contractors. We have a whole business that just works on the buildings that we do. And then we have Capital Residential Group, which is the real estate brokerage, which then sells all of the units that we go and then turn around and do. There's a lot there. I'm sorry. I apologize. But that in a nutshell, right? So Capital Equity Partners generally we find opportunities and we raise money for them.
Can you give us an example of like maybe kind of the projects that you would typically work on?
Sure. I'll give you one that we just completed. So it is a two-family home that we bought. So it's residential. Everything that we do is generally residential in the city of Boston.
So apartments.
Apartments, I mean, you could call them apartments like two families, three families, four families. So anything that is four units and under is considered residential.
Okay.
5 units to 500 units more is considered commercial.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Yeah. So to be a residential investment, it doesn't just have to be a place that somebody lives at. It has to be something under a certain cap too.
Yes and no. So if to consider something a commercial investment, In the underwriting for commercial assets is different than underwriting for residential assets because the loans are looked at differently.
So
that comes down to your banks. But generally speaking, when you go through a construction loan, doesn't matter if you're building, again, 150 units or 4 units, the construction process or the construction loan is generally the same.
Mm.
So, for instance, we bought a two-family home for $950,000 back in 2016.
Okay.
And then we went through the entitlement process. And we were originally going to try to go for a three-family, so do three units there. But the zoning in the city of Boston had changed about 3 months after we purchased it. So we bought the building thinking we could get a much bigger building, and then now we couldn't get what we wanted to. I mean, it's all going to work out in the end, but on paper, we probably lost close to $300,000 just by the zoning change. And we didn't know it was coming. So, so we went through the entitlement process. That took a while. We finally get all, had the community meetings and went through the City of Boston Zoning Board of Appeals. We got our building, had all the permits done. So we build the building. We spend about $1 million building it. So we tore it down. We built a brand new two family.
Mm-hmm.
So we spent roughly about $1 million doing that.
Oh,
so
wow.
Now our capital basis is 1.95, acquisition of 950 plus $1 million in construction.
Yeah.
So let's call it $2 million, not including the interest on the loans that we're carrying.
Mm-hmm.
And they're up for sale right now, and the gross is probably around $3 million.
Wow.
So the market obviously kind of continued to rise from 16 to 19. So that plays a factor.
Mm-hmm.
That it wasn't part of our underwriting factor. That's just kind of a thing when things take a little bit longer. If the market goes up, that's just gravy on top of what your original pro forma was.
Yeah.
So those are the types of deals that we generally like to try and get into. That's a sweet deal.
Yeah.
That's a really good deal. They're not all that good. But it'll be a significant return. The projected returns on that are pretty fantastic. So
we're going to come back to a little bit more of what you do, especially in the second segment. I want to step back, though. Mm-hmm. And the first segment, we like to talk a lot about how you got to where you are today, the journey of your story.
Cool.
So tell us a little bit about how you went from little kid into finding real estate along that journey. Walk us through that journey.
Sure. So I grew up... And the theme through all of it is, as I've reflected back on my life and things like that, is financial education.
Okay.
All right. So I grew up in a town called Reading, Massachusetts. It's about 12 miles north of Boston. It's a different community than it was when I grew up. It was kind of cow country when my parents moved up there in 77.
Oh, wow.
But now it's it's an affluent suburb of Boston now. both my parents are from the inner city, Cambridge and Malden. And my dad was an electrician. My mom desperately wanted to stay home with her kids, but she couldn't because it wasn't enough money. So she went to work. She was an office administrator.
Okay.
And so growing up, what I remember growing up, obviously we got all the love and everything. They were awesome.
Mm-hmm. Right?
They're great parents. And all my friends loved my parents. And our house is like the community house. The door's never been locked, right? It's one of those kind of houses.
Yeah.
But because there was never a lot of money, it was always a little robbing Peter to pay Paul growing up.
Right.
So we never really got a financial education growing up. Balance a checkbook, that's about it. And probably just due to the fact that my parents didn't have money. They didn't come from money, so they didn't really know about money. So how can they educate us on that?
Can't teach what you don't know.
Exactly. So, and it's different like today. I mean, the resources today to be able to learn anything that you want are completely different than they were 30 years ago.
Yeah, no internet for those people watching.
No, none, exactly. did a lot of sports growing up, and they were always there for us at our games and supporting us, and it was great. So when I went to college, I wanted to be in broadcast journalism. So I thought I'd be in front of the camera. I thought I would, be on like a news desk or something like that, doing sports.
Mm.
So when I graduated, I worked for ESPN for like a year.
Oh, wow.
And cut highlights. Was watching sports and cutting highlights for SportsCenter. Like when SportsCenter was SportsCenter, not what they are today.
Oh, you mean before ABC? Is it ABC or Disney? Well, Disney owns it.
I know they still owned it actually when I was there. This was probably 2001.
Okay. 2000. So this is before they cut like 90% of their staff.
This is 2000. Now that I'm thinking about it. I was saying earlier to someone, I'm like, it was like 2001, 2002. I'm like, no, actually, it was like 2000, 2001. So I was watching sports, cutting highlights.
Yeah.
And it was twofold. Being a 22-year-old kid, living in Central Connecticut, I wasn't that excited. Like, there's really nothing going on here.
Yeah.
But I was working Wednesday night to Sunday, or Wednesday to Wednesday to Sunday, like 6 at night to 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. And because you think about sports, when are sports? Nights and weekends and holidays.
Yeah.
So you're working when everyone else isn't.
Yeah.
And it started to grind on me a little bit. And I was looking at guys twice my age, with my age now, like in their 40s. And they were, you know, young families, and they're working the same shifts I am. I'm like, that looks like crap. Like, I don't want that for my life. No way. So, and then I had some experiences trying to build a tape and be in front of the camera. And it was, it didn't go so well. Mm. You know, it was actually a funny story. I was standing in front of I took a cameraman I was at a live event out in Fontana, California at a racetrack. And I wanted to build a tape because I wanted to try to be on in front of the camera. So then you got to be able to do stand-ups and do live shots.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, let's just, come on. Like, you want to go with me over here? He goes, yeah, I'll come with you. Absolutely. So cameraman comes over, gives me the stick flag, says ESPN on it. So we stand in front of the actual, you know, the Indy car that they're working on. And all of a sudden, a crowd of people starts gathering behind him. And I just froze like a deer in headlights. I couldn't get it out, couldn't do it. And I just, at that point, I was like, this career isn't going to happen. You know,
this is not the dream I thought it was.
No. So I came back and I was kind of starting to consider and ponder. And like that, these are the revelations I was making, like looking at all the people here and like, is this really what I want? So back then you had to go to like a Barnes and Noble or a bookstore to actually buy books.
Yeah.
So I was in a bookstore at the mall or in West Farms, Connecticut, the West Farms Mall in Connecticut, right outside of New Britain. And I ended up buying Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Mm.
And that was the catalyst. Like so many other people in the real estate business, that was my catalyst to like, but more so to like financial education.
Right.
So my financial education, like it spoke to me based on the way I grew up and you know what we had and what we didn't have. Yeah. I had one of my best friend growing up. His dad was very successful in business. So and like that was like, and he still is to this day. He's one of my mentors. I've been able to ask him all sorts of stuff about owning a company. He ran a large company and he sold it off. Like he did very, very well. So he's a mentor to me now, and mm-hmm. I ask him advice all the time. So we ended up – I ended up kind of just – the light bulb went off after I read that book, and to me it was about financial education. So left Connecticut, went back to Boston. I was much happier as a 22-year-old having a chance to go out into the into Boston, into like a real city to – instead of like West Hartford or Hartford where the scene just wasn't it. So – and that's what I wanted to do when I was 22 anyways. You know, it's like, yeah, career, I'll build my career, whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, I ended up landing in mortgage finance and it clicked.
Mm.
And so I spent 10 years doing mortgages and mortgage finance, sitting across from individuals, but truly understanding what assets are, income, credit, liabilities, and how they all work around your mortgage, just about the real world and how it all works.
Yeah.
So, but it gave me an opportunity. I'm a very engaging, authentic kind of person. When I meet someone, like I genuinely care about like their story, like, you know, where are you from? What do you know, like we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
And, I've always had that ability to connect with people. So I was very good at the mortgage business. It was a little bit of sales, but it was more just about, you know, connecting to do that sale and just to let the numbers speak for themselves.
Yeah.
So after understanding that, ups and downs with the mortgage business, and I eventually, you know, got my real estate license just to sell real estate and understand the asset class that I was financing a lot more. Growing up in the trades with my dad as an electrician, I was, you know, breaks, summer breaks and school breaks. Like I was always working with him in the field.
Yeah.
So like construction was kind of in my blood. So I was like, you know what? And I started reading a bunch of stuff and watching a bunch of stuff on development and flipping houses. So I was like, I want to learn more about that. So I went, started educating myself on that. And eventually by 2011, once I felt like we were ready to go and we got some coaching, you know, we were off and running in 2011. And we've been syndicating, like raising capital and developing 2 to 4 unit residential, ground up construction, full gut renovations in South Boston primarily. For the last 8 years.
South Boston were like Matt Damon and those guys grew up.
That's it. So I didn't grow up there. My business partner grew up there, John.
Yeah.
It's a wild town.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the old guard has moved out a little bit. There's still plenty around, but I mean, a lot of people know that.
Working class families. That's it. Yeah.
I mean, one family was on all 3 floors of the triple decker.
Yeah.
And all those triple deckers have been
Mark
a lot
Wahlberg
of them.
And the Wahlberg.
The L Street Tavern.
Yeah.
I actually know the woman who owns the L Street Tavern.
Okay.
Yeah. She's wonderful too. So Anywho, a couple of years ago, we decided, you know, looking at our business models and like trying to say, hey, like, because to us, our investors are our lifeblood of our company.
Yeah.
So if we look at a deal the way we look at deals, we want to make sure that they're not for us, not for our own sake, mm-hmm. but what's it going to return for our investors?
Yeah.
So like, we've built relationships and we use their money to do our projects, and we want to make sure we're giving solid returns back to them. Yeah. So we started looking at the multifamily space and knowing that that can weather any type of, well, not any type, but it weathers a market correction or an economy better than trying to just liquidate an asset in a soft market where you're yeah. slashing prices and reducing the amount of return that you yeah. can provide. So that's what we do. I guess to the core of your question, my financial education has grown, it has led me and pulled me down the path of real estate and investing and showing other people how to do that as well.
I want to pivot here and move towards the end of this first segment. The sure. first question we always ask is, how do you find purpose in what you do?
I think purpose begins with your why.
What's your why?
My why? I have a bunch of different whys, but my whys are being able to contribute to others.
Okay.
So whether that means in a financial way, mm-hmm. Or even in an advice way.
Yeah.
I have plenty of, in my business, I provide, I provide that to my investors, mm-hmm. and I give them, I see it as me giving them, contributing to them and helping them grow their goals, their financial goals. That's one. The other would be, let's say, individuals who are just starting out in this business that mm-hmm. want to know more. I'm always very generous with my time.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've been through a bunch, so I'm always happy to give advice or to, you know, help someone like figure out how to start out. Mm-hmm. So contributing in that way, that's one of my big whys.
We all face challenges, whether it's personal or business. What's one challenge that you're working to overcome?
My big challenge, I'd say right now, is on my businesses, is getting things maybe more organized.
Okay.
From a business sense.
Yeah.
That's probably one of my big challenges. But I think for all of us, and it's to a degree, it's overcoming fear.
Yeah.
And taking the next step, or spinning off a new division of a company,
mm.
Or starting just a whole new business. It's trying to eliminate the negative self-beliefs. That like, oh, no one would do this, or no one would pay attention to that. But quieting those and just saying, I'm going to do it. If this is a goal of mine, I'm going to take action, and then I'm going to evaluate my results. And if, you know, and look at what happened. If it failed, change my action. If it succeeded, then continue to build on that.
Yeah.
So just that's just the recipe for success. So understanding that process and really trying to eliminate fear. And not let the negative self-beliefs, because we all have them, and they're all BS. So,
what's the next big dream, idea, goal that you have?
The next one or the big one?
The next one. Okay. We'll talk about the big
one
later.
Okay.
Yeah.
For me, the next one is actually building out a sizable multifamily portfolio.
Okay. For yourself?
No. For myself and my investors.
Okay.
Being able to... continue to build an asset base that I can provide opportunities for others to invest into to mm-hmm. grow and achieve their financial goals.
Yeah. Super cool. We're going to take a break right here. And when we come back, we're going to go deeper into how you can get a better education in finance and what you need to know about what you're doing for retirement with your 401ks and IRAs and Roth IRAs and other financial instruments that we all have no clue what we're really doing with. So we'll be right back with Andrew and go much deeper into this conversation. Hey there, it's Mike, and I have a question for you. Are you working on getting ready for your next event? Maybe it's a conference, maybe it's for a team meeting for your business, maybe it's even for your church or social organization, and you want someone to come in to talk about podcasting, ideas, innovations, dreams, and how you can turn those dreams and ideas into reality. Well, I would love to be part of your event. Let's connect. Head on over to jumblethink.com, drop me a note, and let's see if I can come help you with your next event. Now let's rejoin our conversation with Andrew. We are back with Andrew. Before we get going, important question. How can people find and connect with you?
Absolutely. Best way to go is my website. It's Cap Equity Partners, so CAP is in profit, equitypartners.com. There's a phone number up there. You can call me. It's a Google number. It'll come right to my cell. I always answer it if I have the opportunity to. If I'm in a meeting or I can't, I won't. But always leave me a voicemail, and I will get back to you.
And to make it easy for all you lazy people out there, it's in the episode notes. Yeah. Just go there, click the link. Or if you missed it, just go check it out there.
Absolutely. But you can also look me up on LinkedIn.
Okay.
You know, S-C-H-E-N-A. There's not that many of us out there.
I know one of your passions is education around finance, especially since you came from a place where your parents loved you, were well-intended, but they didn't have the knowledge, didn't have the resources for the knowledge because lived in a different era. How did you overcome? Because even when you were starting to get into this, the internet was still early. Mm-hmm. We didn't have all of these experts on social mm-hmm. media channels, on YouTube, on wherever. We didn't have as many blogs when you were transitioning this. So the world of education around this was still scarce for you. Mm-hmm. How did you start to educate?
Yeah, and that's frustrating. I mean, even about that, I mean, because our schools, I mean, our educational system doesn't teach it.
No.
They may teach an accounting class, which is, you know, how to operate a ledger.
I don't know if they even teach that anymore.
Right. So it's kind of like fair for yourself. Like all the important things that we all have to pay attention to, like taxes.
Oh, you mean the things that
like
they don't teach at school.
Exactly. Like, so, I mean, a lot of it, I'd say it just started with books. Mm. And what's funny is that I wasn't a big reader growing up. Mm. I wasn't some scholar. I wasn't a valedictorian. I mean, my mother was, but I wasn't. But you know, I was a C+, B- student. Yeah. So, but I've always gotten the hard work from my father. So when I started reading, you know, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah. I want to pause there because I hear this over and over again with people like, hey, I wasn't a good student. I really wasn't into reading. You know, this whole thing about understanding how much money I should invest where and all that kind of stuff. You hear these things over and over again about people saying, I didn't come from a place where I cared.
Right.
I didn't come from a place that I really actually enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. But it seems like for so many people who, whether it's real estate, whether it's finance, whether it's the area of expertise that they're in, all of a sudden there's a spark moment where they're like a sense of curiosity mm-hmm. awakens and they become avid readers or they figure out how to research it. And, you know, we're in a different time, so it's completely different now. Right. But you hear it over and over again with whatever the outlet was that all of a sudden something's shifted in them.
Right.
Was that your story?
Slightly, yeah. I mean, the ignition point was, you know, reading that book back in 01 and, you know, even to that degree, it's not like I went out and just started buying all these real estate books. It just, to me, it evolved over time.
Yeah.
And the relationships I had growing up, I was very happy doing my, you know, being in the mortgage business. I was making good money. It took me around the country. And I felt like I had a purpose. I was doing something for others that they needed help with and educating people about that stuff. So, I started reading even towards the end of my mortgage career is really where I started picking it all up.
So mortgages are kind of an interesting thing altogether. Did you just have somebody say, hey, come work for me? Like, how did you?
So, funny story. Okay.
That's not the easiest thing to learn
No,
either.
It isn't. So, when I came back from ESPN, I ended up selling radio for ads for a station in Boston. Yeah, it was brutal.
It is a hard industry.
Brutal.
Yeah.
And I was out trying. So, at the time, the station I was selling was had Howard Stern on.
Oh, wow.
And I was trying to go out and get these. And of course, at this time, I didn't really know. A lot of small businesses.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to pitch them on advertising like $40,000 a month. It's like they don't even make like half of that. Like, goodness. So sales training, right?
Yeah.
So I came across a mortgage company. So I called him and he's like, you know what, Andrew? He's like, I'll tell you what. He's like, you've got a really good personality on the phone. He's like, well, I'll tell you what. You come in, you pitch me what you've got. and I'll try and pitch you what I've got. I'm like, and I was like, at the time, it was grinding on me at that point too, being in that job. And I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? Okay. So I went out, gave him my pitch. And he's like, okay, well, that sounds interesting. He goes, let me tell you what we do here. So started kind of getting a little bit more interested. And I'm like, yeah. So after about a week or so of thinking about it, and I was just like, yeah, I'm done with the radio thing. So I went and I worked for my first mortgage company, and that was it wasn't a great experience, but then eventually a gentleman that I had known in my hometown had started a mortgage brokerage. And as soon as I saw the sign go up, which was very close to my house at that time, I called it immediately. I was in there the next day, hired, and was rocking and rolling with it. So that's how it happened. And then it just, as I began to, obviously understand and educate more of it was a sales education, it was a financial education, it was just all of it. And it was great, but I had other friends who had started their own businesses as well. And, being able to watch what they were doing and going through and their experiences, because I kind of ran my own business. I ran my own desk, right? Yeah. It was under the umbrella of somebody, but I was running my own business, but it was under somebody. I was paying somebody half of my my profits. So that was a little bit of my first experience in going full commission. No salary. It was scary as hell. And it was, but once you get over that fear and you understood it, it's just, you get that entrepreneurial bug and trying to build your own business out under the umbrella of somebody else. So that's what really started it. And then, again, by the time 06, 07 came around, they were,
just pre-recession.
Right. I started actually looking into, I started attending RIAs because I wanted to know more about real estate investment and how to invest in real estate. And then that led to flipping properties and how do you do those deals. And obviously coming from a construction background, I was super interested in that. I'm like, I can do this.
Yeah.
I can absolutely do this. I've got the financial background and I've got the construction background, if you will.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is perfect.
Yeah.
Recession hit and that kind of went away for a little bit. I still have my mortgage license, but that was tough too. And I worked with a very close friend of mine I grew up with at the time too, just to have money coming in.
Yeah.
And then one day I kind of dusted off the box of all the programs. So you asked originally in this question was what was the spark? How did it pull you? Like what transpired? I dusted off this box of that was sitting in my home office. I'm like, what the heck is in here? And it was all the materials I had purchased from a seminar.
Yeah.
And I started voraciously just reading through it. And it was like literally 6 months later, the doors were open and we were looking for properties. And that was it.
Wow. There's so much more to this conversation that we could have.
I know.
and unfortunately, we just don't have the time because we're at this event. And that's how these work. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a different beast. I want to make sure we hit a couple points here that I think are going to be really good for our listeners. Number one, you talk about 401ks, IRAs, and self-directed investing.
Yes.
Talk to us a little bit about what that means and what people really need to know about taking control of their investments.
Absolutely. So I'll give a quick backstory and then I'll address it. So my wife and I, in our development business in Boston, we had someone back in 2017 invest in one of our opportunities with a solo 401k, which is it's a 401k, but it's you self-direct it. If people in your audience aren't familiar with what self-directing is, you can take your retirement funds and you can put them in a Fidelity or a Schwab or something like that. That's your traditional IRAs and 401ks that are with your company. And you may have limited selection of the types of investments you do. A majority of people, not all, but a majority of people just take those investments and those funds and just set it and forget it.
Yeah.
And they're letting...
Maybe rebalance it every once in a while.
Every once in a while.
Yeah.
But the problem is, I mean, and any most financial advisors will tell you, well, if you have a good mix of stocks and bonds, you should be able to weather any storm.
Yeah, it's all about risk and weathering risk.
Absolutely. But based on those types of balances, you're generally speaking aren't going to achieve that much more than 8-9%.
You're going to do exactly what the market does.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and that's their goal. And they have fiduciary responsibilities and I believe RIAs do. I don't think broker dealers have to, but anyways, that industry has been around for so long, and it is highly regulated. What ends up happening is that during 1974, when they passed the ERISA Act, mm-hmm. which allowed companies to begin offering 401ks to individuals, I think the government knew even back in the early 70s that the Social Security system wasn't going to last very long. So they passed
or at least
that.
Needed to be supplemented heavily.
Yeah, exactly. So then again, it wasn't what it was intended for, what people are using it for today anyways. But self-directed IRAs were actually made legal in 1974. Yeah. But all the marketing dollars and the ads went through Wall Street. So yeah. that's why everybody knows about yeah. investing in the stock market or 401ks. So you can roll that money out of an old IRA or an old 401k and roll it into a self-directed type of vehicle, which is a self-directed IRA, solo 401k, or a qualified retirement plan.
So with that, how much of the freedom that you're able to operate in today and that individuals can with self-directing their investments has to do with the technology catching up with it?
I think it's becoming more prominent. It's slowly starting to move its way out because of technology.
Yeah, because I mean, before it was like you had to go through a broker dealer or a clearinghouse of some sort because you didn't have the capability to go directly to the exchange and be a part of any kind of investment. You needed somebody else to be on your behalf because of the technology.
As long as you were an accredited investor,
right?
So, like even today, there are large operators that mm-hmm. do these big, like the example I gave earlier of the $10 million office building.
Yeah,
there are large operators that need to raise $20-30 million to do a real office building,
yeah.
and they can go through broker dealer networks and raise that capital from those broker dealers'
yeah.
clients.
Yeah, and they still that's changed in the last 3 years about accredited investors. There's a small you have a small was it $2,500 a year, or $2,900 or something like that. I forget what the amount is, but that as a non-accredited, you can get involved with things like this directly.
Right, I don't know the dollar amount.
Yeah, I forget what it is,
but the rules have started to loosen a little bit, and that's why crowdfunding kind of exploded a few years ago.
Yeah.
But I mean, SEC guidelines still require accredited, non-accredited, accredited, sophisticated, non-accredited.
Yeah.
And based on the type of securities exemption that an operator will use, will determine the type of capital you're raising and the type of people you can put into your opportunity.
Right.
But be that as it may, there are so many different types of opportunities that are out there.
Yeah.
So as my network has grown across the country with different operators doing multifamily or retail or office, and even us as developers and multifamily operators, the opportunity for people to diversify out of, let's say, the stock market, which is incredibly volatile right now, to take or peel off a percentage of their existing retirement funds and put it into an investment of real estate that is, I mean, it's a tangible asset. It's secured. It's insured. It generally provides especially in multifamily, it provides a basic human need.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people out there that have to rent by necessity, not by choice.
Mm-hmm.
And investing into those kinds of opportunities can with your retirement funds can generate double the types of returns that you can get in a balanced portfolio in the stock market.
And
a lot of people just don't know about it.
Yeah.
Or if they ask their advisor about it, the advisor is going to tell them, oh, you can't do that. That's illegal. No. Well, they're telling you that because they just don't know, number one. Or number two, they do know, and more money out of your account means less of a commission for them.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not here to bash anybody, but that's generally just truth.
Yeah, yeah.
It's either one or the other.
So what kind of people are these kind of investments good for?
What kind of people?
Like, what are the things that you would say – you should really have X amount of dollars in assets or like this kind of leverage this amount of risk. What would be the ideal person that you would work with look like?
I think that it really depends. I mean, let's use averages.
Okay.
Right? So Fidelity will tell you that the average – or Investopedia, I believe. It was Investopedia. Investopedia will say that the average 40-year-old should have about $100,000 sitting in their IRA or 401k.
Yeah.
And I think by the age of 30, it's 11 or 15,000, and then by age 40, it's 100,000, and then by age 50, it's like 178 or something like that, closer to 200, which is crazy because everyone thinks like, okay, well, if you only have $200,000 or even $300,000 sitting in an account by the time you're 65, 70, you're like, what else am I going to live on? Because that's not going to be enough.
Right.
So pointing those types of things out. I mean, generally speaking, I like to see somebody that's got let's say $100,000 in an account, you know, I'd say between 50 and 100.
Okay.
And to, you know, if you want to peel a percentage of that off or all of it off, that's up to you. That depends on your risk tolerance. You know, what where you want to spread your risk around to, you know, financial products or real estate. There's a lot of different vehicles out there that you can invest when you're a self-directed IRA or solo 401k owner. You can put it into real estate. You can put it into like physical gold and silver. I mean, there's you can invest it into somebody's private business. So if you were starting a new business and I believed in your business, I could take my self-directed funds and give it to you.
Yeah.
And then in their operating agreement, you'll say, okay, you own 25% of my business.
Yeah.
All right, great. If that business takes off and you sell it, well, great. We both win. We both win. My account, my retirement account wins.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about. So realistically, I'd say between 50 and 100,000. A lot of people should get educated on the how to understand the risks in real estate.
Yeah.
And that's another piece of it. So it's understanding that you can redirect investments into real estate, but then it's understanding the real estate risk.
Yeah.
But what's funny is that, you know, people are like, oh, well, it's too risky. Well, how do you know? Do you know the underlying underwriting that's going on the stock portfolio that you have? Probably not.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, especially the people who are just setting it and forgetting it. It's not the to ensure that your hopes and dreams of retirement to base it on Wall Street is a hope, and I would never want to hope that my retirement's okay because of Wall Street.
All right, we only have a second left in this segment. We're running out of time, but I want to ask you one final question, and that question is: if somebody's interested in this kind of self-directed investing, what's the next step they should take to learn more about it?
So, the best way for somebody to go learn about self-directed IRA investing or solo 401k investing is simply Google it.
Okay.
So you could do self-directed IRA real estate investing. If you just Google self-directed investing, and I've done this, a lot of the financial banks have started to see the outflows going to these companies.
Yeah.
So what they've done is that they're starting to market self-directed, quote unquote, accounts within their bank.
Yeah.
And they're getting people to sign up. But what that all that means within their bank is that you can self and point your funds at whatever funds that they have.
Yeah.
You still can't go out and invest in real estate or precious metals or businesses or anything like that. It's not a true self-directed account.
Yeah.
There are certainly companies out there, Entrust, what's the other one? There's a Entrust Cama Plan, there's a handful of them out there. If you just start Googling those companies, you'll see the others pop up. And that's the best way to understand self-directed investing.
Super cool. A lot more we could be talking about.
Sure.
We're out of time, unfortunately. So we're going to pause here with a few minutes. And when we come back, we're going to do rapid fire questions with Andrew.
Love it.
There is a lot of exciting things happening here at JumbleThink. One of the things I'm most excited about are some of the events we're going to be a part of, and I would love to connect up with you at these events. So head on over to jumblethink.com. You'll find a little link under speaking to talk about my schedule. We can connect at events like PodMax or even Story Expo, Sound Education. There's a ton of events that I'm going to be at this year to speak and share about what JumbleThink's doing, about stories, about ideas, about innovation, and how to make those dreams a reality. So let's connect. Head on over to jumblethink.com, and I'd love to see you at one of these events in 2020. Now let's jump into rapid fire questions with Andrew Shenna.
We are back with Andrew for rapid fire questions. Andrew, are you ready?
I am ready.
I'll give you a second to get that gulp of water in. I saw it. I was waiting for you to put it in there.
I almost spilled it all over myself.
First rapid fire question. As a child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Race car driver.
Nice.
Yeah, still do.
You should. You could do it. There's amateur circuits.
There are. I actually bought the Skip Barber textbook on how to drive a race car when I was like 22.
Yeah.
I just never did it. That's all right. I love it though.
What's one tip you'd give someone with a big idea or dream and they don't know where to start?
Big idea or dream, educate yourself about it and take action.
What is one change you'd like to see in the world?
Ooh, one change I'd like to see in the world. That's a tough one. I would say just if everyone could just be nicer to each other.
Yeah.
For sure.
What do you
spread the love, man.
Yeah. What do you want your legacy to be?
What do I want my legacy to be? I want my legacy to be one that, you know, I want people to remember me by knowing that I worked my tail off to be able to provide and to provide not only for my family, but to help contribute to others, to be able to contribute to others in some form or fashion.
Where do you find inspiration?
I don't know. I'd say a lot of different areas. My family, number one, and I think looking at the leaders of the industry I'm in is number two, and I think I'd say the shared goals of my wife and I. Mm. I think that's where a lot of it will kind of generate from, and then everything else is kind of, you know, all around it.
What is one book that you think every dreamer should read?
I don't know, because. Let me think about this. I'm putting me on the spot. Couldn't have emailed these. No, I'm teasing. Every dreamer should probably read, because if a dreamer wants to start if it's a business dream.
That's a fine answer.
A business dream. If you want to read a book about business, I'd say something like maybe Good to Great. Is one. Or if you want to get into business, if being in business is your dream or doing something for others is your dream, and to be able to understand Cashflow Quadrant from Robert Kiyosaki is really good too.
For you, how do you define success?
I define my success by, first my family's happiness, my own happiness, and I'd be lying if I didn't say my monetary achievements to be able to support what my family wants to do. For me, my goals are financial freedom. Mm-hmm. My selfish goals, aside from providing for others, but being able to do what you want, when you want, where you want, with who you want. That's it for me.
What is one thing you wish you would have known when you first started out?
Probably how to like self-prime, or like being able to solve meditation, being able to kind of clear your mind and live with an attitude of gratitude. Really, yeah.
And our final rapid fire question for today is, what is one dream you're still wanting to fulfill in your own life?
House, St. John, near okay. beach.
Ah.
That's it. That is it.
As we wrap up, we always like to have our guests have the final thought. What is your final thought for all of us listening today?
Final thought, I would say, don't take what has been provided to you as the only answer. The norm doesn't always have to be the norm. There are other opportunities out there.
Nice. Andrew, thanks so much for taking time
out. Thank you so much for having me.
Being on the show with us.
Absolutely, I appreciate it.
Once again, I want to thank Andrew for taking time out and being on the show with us today. So great to connect with him at PodMax. You can find all of his links in the episode notes. I'd also love to connect with you at the next PodMax. You can learn more about it at podmax.co. I know I say it in most episodes, but I believe you're created for something awesome, that the dreams and ideas inside of you matter, that you have purpose. And for me, today's takeaway in today's show is very simple. Andrew shared how he had what looked like an incredible career opportunity, amazing doors open at ESPN, and a future that was bright, and yet he knew it didn't satisfy or create the lifestyle he wanted. So instead of just living there and staying there, he chose to take a leap into the unknown and create a better life. I want to encourage you today to take stock at where you're at. What is going on in your life, whether it's your career, whether it's the future you want to create, really think about it. Is what you're doing today going to lead you to the place you want to be? If it's not, reassess, come up with a new strategy, and move forward. Now it's your turn to get out there. Your dreams and ideas matter. You matter. So dream big and change the world around you.
En avant, en arrière, sur les côtés. Vous êtes une autre personne. Les mères de famille, les enfants peuvent également prendre un moment revitalisant dans quelques mois.
lorsque vous aurez bien saisi la technique et que vous serez maître de votre corps, vous pourrez vous décontracter même en travaillant.